Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
On the Pilot TV podcast this week, we're getting bloody on the streets of London with Chope Derisu in season 2 of Sky's ultra-violent crime drama, Gangs of London. And Chope himself will be on the show a little later to talk more about that. Plus, we're committing virtual crimes with Chloe Grace Moretz in The Peripheral on Amazon Prime and discovering what it really means to spend all your time in the house watching TV in Channel 4's Somewhere Boy. I'm James Dyer, and welcome to the Pilot TV podcast, your weekly guide to every show that matters, and a podcast that can finally reveal that Rings of Power finale, which displayed what you all suspected from the very start: the Dark Lord Sauron was Boyd Hilton all along. And speaking of which, all the way from the ash-strewn wastes of deepest Mordor is the man himself, fresh from terrorizing the realms of men. It's Boyd Hilton. Hello.
Good afternoon, James.
Good.
I feel like I've spent a magical day with you already. We did a presentation this morning.
We spent a lot of time together today, Boyd.
Yeah. And it's ongoing now.
Yeah, it is. It feels like we've been doing this all day.
What more could anyone want?
Yeah, that's it. The whole day with me.
Yeah.
It's great. I'm glad you're enjoying yourself.
Yeah.
Also with us, of course, is Pilot TV's very own High Priestess of the Eldar. It's Kay Ribeiro.
Hello.
Hi. You have not spent the whole day with me.
No,
you'll be
I was
glad
not
to.
Invited.
Yeah, you were.
But anyway, it's sore subject.
Yeah, we did a special little mini pilot presentation for an ad department in Blackfriars in London.
I don't think you need to get into the full detail.
Really? You don't think anyone cares? All right, fine.
There
are two on side baseball.
I'm not even sure the ads people cared.
No, I don't think they did.
It was the level of detail you were going into.
Yeah, it was maybe a bit more detailed than it needed to be.
The names of everyone there.
Yeah, so there was John, there was Rupert. What was odd about it, though, is because it was like a stage area was set up in the middle of these people's office.
Yeah.
And so we did this kind of little 15-minute podcast segment in front of, I don't know, a handful of people, and everyone else was just trying to work around us.
Oh, no.
So you've just got me banging on in your ears on a PA system while you're trying to check your emails, and nobody needs that first thing on a Thursday morning.
Awkward.
Is what I'm saying.
Oh,
Orcs. It was Orcs.
Orcswood. Oh, very good. Very good. I like that. Excellent. Well, that segues very neatly into what we've been watching. Now, it's Monday as we go out, but it's Thursday as we record. And, Bordy, I'm assuming you were invited to see the finale of The Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power. Ahead of time. So you've seen the final episode?
No, I haven't.
You were not invited. You did not get to see it.
No.
Well, that's unfortunate. Many people from Empire were invited. I was not among them.
And furthermore, I don't care.
Fair enough. Okay, well, this has been a great conversation.
Like you don't care.
I thought you were going to talk about Doctor Who.
Oh, no, we're getting to that. All right, calm down.
I think they must by osmosis. I can only assume that the lovely people from Prime Video know that I haven't really got that immersed in Lord of the Rings.
You don't care about what happens to Galadriel.
I'm definitely not up to watching the finale yet, put it that way. So they didn't bother to invite me.
They screened it for a bunch of people in the Empire office. And on Friday night, we are going to, or as this goes out, we will have done a live Empire Spoiler Special podcast on the finale of The Rings of Power, whereupon not only will we be banging on about it on stage for several hours, but we've also got the cast down, we've got the showrunners down, we're going to be on stage Q&A, we're going to get deep, deep, deep into the big reveal, which I literally don't know as we record this because I still haven't watched the episode. But I'm sure it was great.
Is there a big reveal? You know that, though?
I couldn't possibly say.
Okay.
I can say because everyone listening to this has already heard it or seen it.
Okay.
Because it's been on.
Okay.
It's very confusing.
Is it to do with Sauron?
Possibly.
Oh, okay. See, I know that much.
Yeah.
Just
that, see that. See this is why I did that whole intro. The Dark Lord Sauron has been revealed. It was you.
Oh yeah.
Because the Dark Lord Sauron is revealed in the finale.
Right.
Almost like he wasn't listening to his intro.
It's almost like that. It's almost like he doesn't listen to anything I say.
Almost.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so there's that. So that's a thing. That's a thing.
Yeah. Good.
Now, other things that have aired this week that I haven't seen include Andor.
Right.
Which has aired. The next episode has aired. I haven't seen it. Apparently, it's great. I will say, the previous episode of Andor, so the one prior to the most recent one, which is the most recent one I've seen at this point, where they essentially just sit around on a mountain chatting for the entire episode, was my favourite yet. I thought it was great. I loved it. And it's because it feels absolutely nothing like
any of those other Disney Plus shows. It's just, it feels like an HBO show. It feels like a Star Wars HBO show where they just sit around and have a chat and have a little bit of interpersonal drama. And
a
I'm
bit
here
like
for it.
Us.
A bit like us, Kate. A bit like us. Yes.
Yeah, it's mature. It's mature Star Wars. I agree. I agree. I like that episode as well. What's really weird, can I just say though, listeners won't, obviously this is not a visual medium, but my view of James, right, is I'm across the desk from him in this radio studio, but I can't see your mouth. So I can just see from like, your nose and eyes, and you're like bobbing around. It's really weird. It's so funny.
I'm obscured by the monitor, is what you're saying.
It's like an intrinsically comical way of looking at you.
Also because his eyebrows just keep shooting up.
Yeah, I can see the eyebrows and the kind of eyes.
But that's
very
it. I don't know if I can I lower the monitor? No, I can't. That's it. You're stuck
maybe
with
if
it.
I look a bit higher.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway. Just
you just have to gaze into
that.
His eyes. It's fine.
Should I throw that detail?
Oh, look at this. The desk is coming down. The desk is. Look, I am revealed in all my glory. There we go. You can see my mouth now.
I literally spent 10 minutes trying to find a chair that would go high enough, and he's just lowered the desk.
I've just lowered the desk.
That's the work of Sauron, right?
That is.
And now do I need to adjust this?
Now, you've all got to readjust your mics now, because I've literally lowered the desk by
about
a foot.
Maybe this will work better.
So, okay. Lots of shuffling of mics now.
That was amazing, wasn't it?
There you go. I'm glad I was able to help. So that's the thing.
Right, you didn't watch Andor.
Didn't watch Andor.
I know for a fact that you haven't watched the latest episode of House of the Dragon, because we discussed it earlier.
Oh, well, no, but that will, as we go out, that will have aired the previous night.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so you're right.
I haven't watched it in advance,
although I do have access to it, but I have not watched it in advance. The other thing I haven't watched, this is a new segment, it's what James hasn't been watching, is the final episode of She-Hulk, which I'm going to watch first thing tomorrow morning so we can record a spoiler special for that as well. But I'm loving She-Hulk. I really liked last week's. I thought it was great. So I'm pretty excited to see the finale of that. And I hear it's possibly the most meta thing that's ever been on TV.
Really?
Yeah.
Maybe I'll catch up with She-Hulk.
Do you think this is what people tune into Pilot for, to hear about shows that I haven't seen but they have? So like they'll have seen all this stuff by the time
I think this is a segment he'll have on the next live show. Live event.
What I haven't been watching why
he likes to have a James themed segment.
I do love a James themed segment.
Non-spoiler specials of shows he hasn't watched.
Yeah. That's what we're gonna do.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I'm here for it.
Yeah,
we'll do that.
You watched the previous episode of House of the Dragon, didn't you? With the one that I had already, which went out on Monday.
So good.
Absolutely phenomenal.
Yes. Yeah. I must admit, that one where, no spoilers, Daemon Targaryen slaps the shit out of someone.
Is that Matt Smith character?
Yes.
Oh, good.
Yes. Yeah. It's all just, again, it's mainly talking. There's a very tense dinner party. Paddy Considine puts on the fucking performance of his career. It's incredible. And then it all kicks off. And it's, what's quite interesting, and again, I'm not going to go into spoilers, so if you're not up to date on House of the Dragon, do not panic. But the final scene of that episode, a lot happens, a lot of import happens. And I kind of feel like if you're not paying attention during the episode, it will be lost on you.
To be honest with you, I had to rewind it and watch it about three times.
Right.
Were you using two screens? Were you like looking at a phone at the same time?
No. So even then, I was like, I don't understand that. I can rewind it. I don't understand that. Rewind it. Yeah. Mm. But there's. Matt Smith, it seems the only character who's not aging, though.
Yes. He seems to be immortal.
He's literally ageless in the show. So I just thought I'd mention that.
So if you didn't understand the last episode of that, you might need to rewind a little bit.
Yeah, you're not alone.
Yeah, you're not alone. It was quite blink and you'll miss it. And a lot of it revolves around people of the same name.
That's
it,
you're right. That's the other thing. And loads of people with the same name. How many Joffreys are there?
A lot of Joffreys, a lot of Aegons.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot that's going around. They weren't the most inventive, the Targaryens, when it came to naming people.
No, they weren't. Nor were they inventive with their hair either.
No.
I mean, you know.
Yeah, it is, as we have said from the start, quite wiggy.
Very wiggy. Yeah.
But I do
very,
like it.
Very hair and skin orientated today.
Yeah. You know, it's our regime. Regimen? What is it? What does one says in the beauty circles?
Regimen, I think. No, regime. Yeah, anything.
A regime.
Skincare regime.
From which the free radicals are trying to break free. Yes, okay, I understand. All right, so something I have been watching, though, I have caught up. There you go. I've seen a thing. I saw a thing. I've now caught up on The Walking Dead. So you'll be pleased to know I'm now up to date on The Walking Dead, enjoying it enormously. Yeah, it's all kicking off in the Commonwealth. It's like it's all happening, you know, the ramp up to the big end of The Walking Dead, and I've missed it a lot, and it's great. So that was good.
That's the thing you've watched.
That's the thing I've watched.
You didn't even watch any of the films for the Empire podcast. One here,
I know.
That is actually true. Yeah, I didn't watch any of the films for the Empire podcast this week.
Yeah.
But that was not entirely my fault.
Well, you know, we heard it was.
Right, okay.
I mean, I think it's pretty much mostly your fault.
Yeah, it, I mean, I had an amount of culpability.
Yeah.
I will admit. And then, of course, the last thing I want to mention before we move on to something that someone else has actually seen is C. Because C, the C finale. Oh. The
I
C
feel
finale.
Like we've been speaking about this every week.
No. I may have mentioned it last week. But the C finale aired.
Yeah, last week you were talking about watching it in your slang kit.
Do you know what? I used to have a slang kit. I no longer have a slang kit, but I do have an Udi.
Oh yeah, I've got an Udi.
But I also have my sea blanket, which is not a slanket, it's a sea blanket.
To?
Yeah, you're referring to the sea blanket. Yeah. Not to be confused with Sea Biscuit, which was a horse in a film. Now, so the final episode of Sea, you know, we bid goodbye to Bubba Voss, we bid goodbye to Tamakti Jun, all of them, you know, that was the end of Sea. Sea finished on Friday, and I have to say, it was emotional. Like, it was a lot. I had real feelings.
Did it make the landing?
It did. It skidded the landing. Bounced the landing. Yeah. Yes, I thought it was a good final episode. There was an unexpected romantic frisson in the final moments, which I didn't see coming. And then a certain decision was made about, well, I can't really say because it's a spoiler. But, you know, that's
James,
some
no one's watching it apart from you.
Boyd, how dare you? It was glorious. It was wonderful. Nice. Also, Tamakti Jun's redemption arc. I've enjoyed that all the way through.
Tamakti Jun.
Yeah, Tamakti Jun. Witchfinder General Tamakti Jun.
Who plays Tamakti Jun?
Tamakti Jun. I'm glad you asked, Boyd.
Sorry.
I am glad you asked.
Yeah.
Tamakti Jun is played by Christian Camargo, who played Dexter's evil older brother, Biney, in season one of Dexter.
Oh, right, okay.
And has also done other things.
Fair enough, okay.
But he is Witchfinder General Tamakti Jun. You know, what happened to Queen Kane? You know, Queen Magra? Any of these people? Cthune? Any of them? You know, you have to watch it, find
the
out.
The queen who liked to...
Yes, the wank praying queen. Yeah.
Wow.
Sylvia Hoax.
Sorry, Kay, apologies, but this is actually is what happens.
It is a thing, the wank praying.
See,
not only was your first ever interview, boy, talking to Charlie Hunnam about rimming, you also spoke to Alfre Woodard about wank praying.
I did. You're so, right. Yeah, I interviewed Alfre Woodard.
You've got a specialism.
God,
you're a very specific interviewer.
Yeah. And I was going to leave this to TV news, but I might mention, whilst we're in the nether regions, you know, there's a program coming up on Channel 4 called My Massive Penis. Program, that's the title of the program.
Really?
Absolutely, yeah.
And what's the premise of the show?
The premise of the show, Channel 4's got a season of, I think it's called Truth or Dare or something like that.
It's a serious thing, right?
Yeah, well,
it's not like,
it doesn't sound like a series.
They've got
no,
a season of shows.
Yeah.
Channel 4's got a season of shows coming up starting in 2 weeks' time, roughly, where they're kind of exploring their own outrageousness. You know, how we're the daring channel back in the day when it first started.
Right.
So they're trying to revive that with this new season. And one of the flagship shows, among many, there's a thing in which Jimmy Carr gets a painting. They've paid for a painting. By Hitler.
Yes. So and they're going to decide whether he's going to burn it or something.
Right.
Yeah.
This is all part of the same season of shows, but My Massive Penis, the program.
Boyd says, adding a caveat.
is the actual title they've gone for, and it's a semi, and they are couching it in the terms of actually having a massive penis is a bit of a problem for many men.
A first world problem, presumably.
And quite a problem for some. Yeah. That's the premise of it, that it's not a great thing, necessarily.
Is this not a, like,
as you might assume,
my wallet's too small for my 50s and my diamond shoes are too tight? Is it that kind of problem?
No. But today, this very day, earlier today, Kay wasn't in the office today. I'm just reading, so you missed this glorious moment. You would have appreciated it. Someone from our picture desk called me over and said, what should we do about the picture for My Massive Penis? Because the pictures that Channel 4 sent, honestly, they are fairly explicit.
And presumably massive.
And the massive members are there to be seen. And they didn't send... You'd think they might send a picture of one of the people taking part, like, cropped. But no, full on...
Well, no, because it's about penis. Yeah.
So we had to decide. I think, you know, it's a kind of family magazine.
No, do you know what I would have suggested if I was there?
Go on.
Slap that penis down on the page and stick an aubergine on it.
Oh, that's a good idea. Yeah, we didn't do that. In the end,
the operation was off.
That's right.
You cropped it. What's the point?
You cropped the penis.
Yeah, that show is about penis. So, like,
so what you actually have in heat is just a picture of a small penis because it's been cropped.
No, you've got a picture of a man's waist.
Right.
Above waist and without showing his penis.
See,
okay.
See, when I'm not here,
it all goes to shit, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Fine.
Wow.
Okay.
Would you have insisted on showing the penis, Kay?
I would have done something to be a bit, modest about it.
No, Kay's classy. She'd have put an emoji aubergine over it.
It was an awkward conversation. Though,
or someone's face.
I slightly felt, I wonder if Channel 4 has really thought about the ramifications of this dragon for TV magazines that have TV in them, because you're immediately thrust into quite inappropriate conversation.
The words I know. Interesting choice of words.
But I was worried, like, HR could be hovering any minute. What are you doing? Why are you standing there looking at these pictures? Blah, blah, blah. It's a can of worms.
It's kind of something.
What I do very much enjoy is that at some point, Boyd, you're going to have to Google my massive penis. Oh. Because you're going to need to know when it's airing or something, and you're going to literally need to Google that. And that is forever going to be in your search history, and there is nothing you can do about
it. When he gets hauled away at work,
that's
we'll
it.
Know why.
That's it. Yeah.
I'll be the first one leading that investigation.
I blame Bloody Channel 4.
Ruddy, Bloody Channel 4. Yeah. Right, other than people's massive penises, what have you been watching, Boyd?
I have been watching. I got up early this morning, this Thursday, to watch from Ryan Murphy Watch. It's the latest in an ongoing series, which is pretty much every week now. Ryan Murphy has another like epic show arriving on Netflix.
Have a day off, Ryan.
Yeah, stop.
And sure enough, The Watcher arrived today.
The Witcher.
No, The Watcher. It is based on a true story, extraordinarily enough, of a married couple with their kids who moved to a new home in New Jersey, only to find that they basically had a kind of stalker called The Watcher, who was observing all of their activities somehow, and they don't really know how.
Creepy AF.
Yeah, all the time, and sending them letters kind of complaining about their behavior and referring to things that were happening in their family, only that he or she could only know through literally like invading their space somehow.
Right, so question.
Yes.
Is the person just doing it from like using binoculars, just watching them, or have they like somehow infiltrated the house?
We don't know. This is the thing. So the Ryan Murphy version of this story is that it's basically he does with almost everything except for the Jeffrey Dahmer series, which we'll go on to later in news, by the way, stuff about that to talk about in news.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Is to treat everything in this kind of slightly camp, over the top, kind of darkly comic way. So what he's done with this show is all of these, the main characters that arrive, played by Naomi Watts and Bobby Cannavale and their kids, they are bombarded from all of their neighbors are crazy, basically. It's bottom line. And they're all watching them and obsessed with them and invading their house.
What?
Yeah. It's like a whodunit.
It's not just one watcher, it's watchers.
It's like a whodunit. It's like, who is the watcher? We're going to have almost...
Who watches the watcher?
Yeah. The entire cast of Neighbours, the characters that
cast of Neighbours?
Oh my God, I got excited then.
The entire cast of characters who are the neighbours of this family have some reason or other to watch them and become obsessed with them.
I don't know if I'm going to find that annoying.
Borderline bonkers.
This
is to the cast of the show. It's unbelievable. Naomi Watts and Bobby Cannavale, the main couple. Mia Farrow is in it.
What?
Yes. I don't know what the last thing she did was, but Mia Farrow is in it in full on mad woman mode. I would say something, but I won't. Noma Dumezweni, who was brilliant, brilliant actress. She's in it. She was in the Harry Potter play. She was in the thing with Hugh Grant and Nicole Kidman. That was that show.
Oh, The Undoing.
Yeah, she's having another fine old time in this. Richard Kind from Curb Your Enthusiasm in it, who's hilarious. Jennifer Coolidge.
Oh wow.
The White Lotus, upcoming in season two. He always assembles an incredible cast and a weird, like, Mia fucking Farrow, I have to say again. And by the way, in episode two, there's a kind of Rosemary's Baby allegation thing that suddenly crops up in the thing. So that, again, the casting is very meta and knowing by Ryan Murphy.
Question.
Another question. Carry on.
Is this annoying?
Do you know what? Here's the bottom line.
It sounds annoying.
Here's the bottom line. And I know that one of the ongoing kind of running jokes of this podcast is that Beth hates all Ryan Murphy product pretty much. Now, I think it's fair to say. And I have my issues with the Dahmer series, the Jeffrey Dahmer series. But there was one great episode in it that's told from the victim's point of view, as I mentioned last week. Some of his shows, I don't think he's done that many great shows since his Netflix deal. I'm a big fan of American Horror Story and still am furious they have not confirmed when they're showing in this country. But the bottom line is The Watcher, I'm really enjoying it. It's funny. It's entertaining. And he's just about, it's based on this true story. He's changed the name of the family, but he's just about getting away with, I think the story itself isn't so horrendous so far. I'm only on episode two. I've watched two episodes that it feels tasteless and exploitative. It is amusing, funny, weird, The cast, brilliant. I'm just fascinated to see the Mia Farrow I mentioned again, just like her in involved in this show. It's just so weird because you just think of her as having this, the last two decades being a constant kind of opposition to Woody Allen. That's just all I think of her as doing in her life, perhaps unfairly. So but bottom line, it's really entertaining. I know I'm going to carry on watching it.
Feels kind of unnecessary, I've got to say.
Well, you know.
I'm going to wait for The Watcher Blood Origin, which I think is coming out later this year.
Of course, yeah. I'd rather watch The Watcher than The Witcher, that's all I would say. Yeah.
Try saying that first.
Apologies. So yeah, I've got five more hours to go. I'm in.
Jesus.
Yeah. I mean, that's short by Murphy standards.
Yeah, that's fair.
Short by Shantaram standards.
That is true.
Then the other thing I was going to mention we're going to do Doctor Who in Also Out, I guess. But I did go to the screening of the last episode, of Jodie Whittaker.
You can talk about it now, if you prefer.
Thank you. Thank you, James. Master of the segments. Segment master.
Tell us about the power of the Doctor.
The power of the Doctor. So it's embargoed. All the details embargoed until it goes out next Sunday, 7:30 BBC One. But they had a lovely screening of it. Everyone was there. Q&A offices with Jodie, etc.
Canapes,
yes.
Ooh. Were they TARDIS shaped?
And they had Doctor Who themed cocktails.
Oh, wow.
And stuff, yeah. It was actually really good.
Oh, into it.
And I had a lovely chat with her afterwards. And she's one of the greatest people. One of the things that everyone mentioned is she's one of the greatest people in acting and showbiz and all that. She's such a brilliant person. But I had a right of a time. It's great fun, the 90 minute. They've made it clear already that it's the Doctor faces the Master, the Daleks, and the Cybermen, which even a Doctor Who doubter like James knows are the three.
It feels like this is Spider-Man 3 syndrome, where they're just throwing everything but the kitchen sink at it.
Well, yeah, but Spider-Man 3, Spider-Man 3, that was not a good film. But this is a fun...
But you haven't included thing. The most important part of the screening, have you, Boyd?
Go on.
Which is that you don't know how it ends.
No. So it's the regeneration episode, obviously. So at the end of it, the Doctor's going to regenerate into, because they didn't show us. This is the interesting thing. So they didn't show us the actual. So you saw the build up to the regeneration. You saw all the fizzy CGI,
and then the lights just came up.
And then screen goes blank. Lights come up.
Amazing.
They warned us first.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, what was quite funny was there was a little kid in front of me who couldn't have been like somewhere about 8 year old kid, and the person who introduced the screening said, "By the way, we're showing you this episode. You're the first people in the world to see it, but we're not going to show the regeneration." And he literally went, "Oh," and she went, "Oh, I'm so sorry." It's the kid.
Is this the definition of a doc tease?
That's good. That's
good one, James.
I'm impressed. So they didn't show it, and what I would say is, and there's loads of secrets and surprises, by the way, that it was filmed over a year ago, and they've kept the secrets and surprises brilliantly, I have to say. But what's interesting about the regeneration is that obviously Shuti Gatwal is the next Doctor, the 14th Doctor, we assume. But we all know that David Tennant has been filming a special of Doctor Who, written by Russell T. Davis, that's part of the 60th anniversary of the show, which is next year, okay? And it could well be that she regenerates into him first, because I think that episode's going to be on before the Shuti Gatwal series, which isn't going to arrive until probably 2024.
But does this work canonically? Like, can the Doctor, like, turn into an old Doctor?
Anything can happen. You can do anything. It's science fucking fiction.
No, Boyd, no. You need internal logic. There have to be rules.
They invented the whole idea of regeneration so that because the actor, they wanted to recast the actor because the actor didn't want to do it anymore. William Hartnell. Yeah, so it's all... They could do what they like, can't they? Obviously, as Russell always mentions with this kind of thing, we can do what we like. And so, but even the regeneration is open to doubt, and that's why it's even more exciting than normal regenerations.
Well,
I'm excited.
Yeah. I mean, I'm excited. I don't know about you, Kate, but I'm super excited.
Oh, so Doctor Who, the Doctor, great fun. And finally, I was going to mention, I went to see a London Film Festival screening of Mammals, which is the new James Corden starring Prime Video series.
Oh, what was it like?
Created by Jez Butterworth. It was really, really good. And it's brilliant to see James Corden back doing absolutely prop acting. And it's a reminder, he can literally do anything. And he's just so good in it. But also, Sally Hawkins is in it, who I love, and she's fantastic in it. She plays his sister.
Is Corden coming back? Is he doing acting full time now that he's given up his talk show?
I think he will do his own projects. Yeah, he's writing stuff, I know, and he will act and stuff. Yeah, I think that is pretty much what
he's doing. And is he coming back to the UK?
Oh, that I don't know. I think, I have no idea. I'm going to make this up by saying I'm going to have a place on both.
Text.
Who knows?
I think he can probably afford multiple houses.
Well,
so.
I'm sure. Yeah. But I think maybe they'll move back. Yeah. I got the sense. And he was at the, there was a little thing afterwards. Shout out to him. Big fan. We said you will be reviewing it on the podcast. I said, of course we will. So yeah.
Just last question about that.
Yes.
What were the canapés like there?
Yeah. Did they have mammal themed cocktails?
They didn't. That was more of an impromptu
right
drinks gathering. I
okay.
would say. That I thrust myself into, so to speak. So there weren't any canapes as such. There were nice packets of crisps and shit, posh crisps and nuts and stuff. Okay,
nuts. Or was okay, it you cool. Fish? I mean, this is my new segment, canapé watch.
Yeah.
So fine, nuts. Yeah. I'm not as impressed yeah. as I was with it by the cocktails, but fine.
I'm calling it what I've been watching slash
what I've been eating.
Whose names I've been dropping.
Oh, okay.
Oh yeah.
And clang, what you've been eating.
Clang,
yeah.
clang.
Yeah. That I hereby conclude the what I've been watching and who I've been name dropping segment for this week.
Kay, what have you been eating?
I've been eating everything. Right, I'm taking you to BBC One, Saturday night, your favourite show of mine, Strictly Come Dancing.
Oh,
that is what I've been watching.
It's almost like you don't listen to the rules of this podcast.
Come on. I listened through all your geek chat. I listened to Boyd's name drops, tried to pick a few up. Come on, you've got to give me some time to talk about my love.
Okay, okay. I will say, just because we tortured you with at least two out of the three shows this week, I will give you 1 minute to talk about this dancing show.
1 minute. I love it. Are you going to get your time right? You'll stop watching.
The two things that I've watched, I'm going to tell you about, right? They have been an absolute joy and a palate cleanser for all the horrendous. No, they're good shows you've made me watch, but they are terrifying, right? Anyway, we'll get to that. But yeah, it's been a palate cleanser. Strictly Come Dancing, as you know, is one of my favourite shows because I love the dancing and the excitement and the glamour and all of it, the drama, the journeys. But Boydo, yeah. did you watch it last week? Oh, no. So when we come out, it'll be probably the week before, with Tony Adams and his Full Monty.
I beg your pardon. Are we back to my massive penis?
Yeah. Like, well,
pretty much.
No comment, but yeah.
Okay, I'll tell you exactly what happened. I didn't watch it, but I did find that clip afterwards and watched his routine. Yes,
it was
extraordinary routine.
Sensational. Yes. I've never seen, right, David Seaman was in the audience.
Yeah.
I haven't seen him laugh. So anyone laugh so hard as he did, as Tony Adams stripped off. I think, do you know what? Good for him. Good for Tony Adams. That's a very embarrassing thing he had to do on primetime TV. But, you know.
And can I point out that a couple of weeks ago we had a discussion when he did his first dance and you thought he was going to be out very quickly. But I pointed out, no, he's not. He's going to stay in because people love him.
I didn't say he's going to be out. I just said it was. My toes curled back because it was so cringeworthy. And even this, I have to say, was pretty cringeworthy. But anyway.
I'm afraid your time is up. we must move on.
No. Just very quickly to say, though, but it is brilliant. And if you, James, just kind of. Give it a go, maybe.
No.
Do it.
Again, if the cast of C were on Strictly Come Dancing,
okay, listen,
and it was Bubba Voss versus Timmukti Jun, I would watch
it. Forget it. This is my time.
Fine.
Okay, fine. The other thing I've been mainlining is Virgin River, which I talked about a few weeks ago.
You did.
Right?
And at length.
Oh, you can talk. James having a go at someone talking about the same show at length. I mean, the irony is.
I don't know what you mean.
Yeah.
James, you total shit. Off the right? Someone put his mic off for a bit. Okay, like, I just want to say,
go on.
I've been.
Tell me about Virgin River.
Boyd, I'm going to talk to you. Right, so. You know, I
don't talk to me, although I am going checking that my Supreme purchase has gone through because it's still.
Boyd, right. It's, listeners, just so you know, Boyd is in some kind of virtual queue to buy a Supreme jumper.
So annoying. Should,
tell us about the jumper, Boyd.
This is
unbelievable. This is literally, no, I put my foot down. You would rather talk about Boyd's buying another Supreme jumper,
yeah.
which frankly he's got 3,000.
Yeah,
of.
He has.
I haven't got that many jumpers. I haven't.
Let me get my little violin out. Anyway.
It's a small scale speckle sweater in heather multicolour.
Right, okay, so we're doing that then. Okay, fine.
And it's still revolving around the thing, like, please wait. I mean, I don't know whether to cancel the purchase or
God,
what.
Look at him. He's traumatised by
if
this thing.
I'm just apologising if I'm slightly distracted.
Yeah.
Carry on. Virgin River.
Yes.
Fine.
Virgin River.
I just wanted to say that I basically have continued mainlining it. It's fantastic. It's very joyful, okay? And it's like...
Oh, you can say it's you corrected yourself there, didn't you?
I was going to say...
It's not fantastic.
No, but do you know what? It's just feel good and it's nice and it's not people killing each other like all the shows you made me watch this week. But also, I just wanted to tell you that I wanted to thank someone who tweeted me. Well, tweeted the podcast, actually. It is Glenn Runnels. And he said that he, too, has been enjoying it. He liked the fact that we're bringing up normal TV. Yeah.
Normal.
And he said that he and his extended family have been watching it. There's no D, swearing or nudity. It's just a nice, wholesome, warm hug of a TV show.
There's no D. Is that what he said?
Yeah. Which made me love him even more. Glenn, I'm totally into this. I was going to say totally into
There's no
the
D.
D
or nudity.
No D or
no
nudity.
D's. Swearing or nudity. But anyway, I just thought his summing up of that show as a warm hug of a TV show was fantastic. And in fact, he probably deserves a place on this podcast more than James, because he's very eloquent in his synopsis. But yeah, so just to say, there are fans of these kind of shows out there. Good, solid, enjoyable shows.
Wholesome.
Yeah, wholesome shows. There is nothing wrong with wholesome shows. Look at, they're literally, they're curling up. That like, Boyd's lips have curled up. And like, he's just
talking about
it. Yeah, look at it. And he's like all scrunchy faced about it.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm on the attack now because you've talked
about it. Boyd's such an elitist, isn't he? Oh, it disgusts me, it does. It really does.
No, listen, you wait in line, James. Anyway, so that's what I've been watching. Some joyful shows because this week, and actually I've had a bit of a look at next week. It's just going to be hell.
Yeah,
hell.
It is. It is. The schedules are not your friends at the moment, Kay. Sorry about that.
No, and then when I talked to you guys about it, because I thought, right, let me talk to my sympathetic colleagues about this, about my the fact that I don't like horror or super violent stuff. And Boyd's words were, it's Halloween, you doofus. So, yeah.
I mean, he's a sympathetic person.
That is the fact, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Do we have an HR section for the podcast?
Yeah, you should probably complain.
Fine. Okay.
Just file a grievance.
Anyway. I finished now, so you can go back to trying to place your order and mocking me.
Yeah, boy, do please keep us updated throughout the podcast.
I will.
The status of your queue.
Everyone's gripped.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's still going. It's still whizzing around.
A very quick drop in while we're still on the What We've Been Watching segment. I have, in fact, now, as we go out on Monday, caught up with all the things that I hadn't done when we recorded this. The Lord of the Rings finale on Friday, which was amazing. And we did a Q&A. We did that live Q&A. The Dark Lord Sauron was there. It was epic. Hopefully that will be out by the time you listen to this on the spoiler special feed. We also recorded our She-Hulk finale spoiler special. Very much enjoyed that. It was just as meta as promised. But again, that's on the spoiler special feed as well. I've also seen the latest Andor, which was the best episode yet. So that's amazing. And on top of all of that, the most recent House of the Dragon, which was the one that went out last night, as we'll go out on Monday, was the best one of those yet. So all in all, pretty good week for telly. Shame I hadn't seen any of it before we did the podcast. The other thing I should mention, unfortunately, this week we did hear some very, very sad news. The passing of legendary actor Mr. Robbie Coltrane. We'll try and get into that in more detail on the next show. But yes, very sad. At just the age of 72. Now, back to the show. All right. Well, before we find out whether Boyd did or did not get his Heather-themed jumper, let's have this week's guest. He is a man who could probably kill you all with a packet of dry roasted peanuts, but he's back splashing the gore around in this week's return of Gangs of London on Sky and Now. It's Chope Derisu. However, and this is absolutely true, it turns out that red stain you see beneath his shirt is in fact not the blood of a London gangster, but rather a glimpse at the Arsenal strip he's wearing under his suit, as Boyd Hilton found out when he spoke to Chope this week.
Welcome to the Pilot TV podcast. How's it going?
Oh, very well, thank you. All the better for seeing you.
Thanks, man. Thank you. Now, Gangs of London, one of our podcast favourite shows of 2020, phenomenal first series. I'm fascinated by when you get the scripts, like the operatic nature of the show is so visually, the whole atmosphere of the show is so spectacular and epic. Is that all there in the scripts? Like when you first read the script, did you realise this was going to be that kind of show?
You know, when I read the first script for the first season, I did get that feeling. And actually, that's one of the things that enticed me into it. I was just like, because I've got quite a theatrical background, started doing school plays when I was younger, and then part of the National Youth Theatre of Great Britain before I signed with my agent. Like theatre and theatricality is always, it's like part of my DNA. So to see that that was going to be sort of reflected on screen, like the scale of the series like was on the page. And I was just like, yo, this is so ambitious and so interesting. I don't know how you're going to achieve it, but I want to be a part of that. I want to see if I can help us achieve it all together. I definitely read that scale on the page in the first few episodes.
And do the showrunners, do they kind of talk to you about how the arc of your character is going to have? Because obviously he started out as an undercover cop and now he's in a very different situation as season two opens. And what was your response when you heard what they had planned for your character?
The first time around, we had quite a clear overview of where we were going to end up by the end of it. And the second time around, it wasn't as clear. But it meant that we were always excited to read the next script. Like, what's going to happen next? What's going to happen next? Like, how are we going to tackle this bit? So it created a sort of anticipation that sometimes you don't always get. And I'm always one for reading ahead. Like, if I know what the end of this story is, I'm like, what happens next? You know, it's like, we haven't shot this season yet. We're already interested in what's going on, like, two seasons down the line. Like, let's do one thing at a time, you know? So there was constant, like, anticipation and just like, but it also meant that we could have a certain input, you know, rather than it be like, this is the story, perform the story. It's just like, this is where we think it's going. And I'll be like, but what if, and then we're like, oh, that's a good suggestion, you know? So it was a bit more of a collaboration this time around.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because even the show is obviously a big ensemble on one level, but equally, I think like your character, Elliot, is like, feels like the heart and soul of the show in a way, like the guy who we're kind of seeing things through his eyes. And even though he's an amazing, like, physical specimen, and he's an incredible action hero now. But there's something almost like every man-ish about his him and his character. Do you feel that way about him?
Yes, I think especially when we meet him in the first series, because you're right, we access this world through his lens. So he's almost a bit, despite his history as an undercover police officer or being in the military and the fact that he can handle himself, He is the outsider, and we as the audience are the outsider as well. So we observe the world through his experience. I think there's a little bit of continuity in that in the second season, in that he's still not perfectly aligned or affiliated with any of the established gangs in London, because after the death of Sean Wallace, you know, he's like ostracized from that family. And there will be repercussions for that. But yeah, he's still the outsider of this world. So, but whether or not the audience can continue to see themselves in him over the course of this series remains to be seen.
Is he getting some extreme situations, I'm guessing?
Most definitely. And some, like, I don't know if we would entirely agree with, you know?
Right.
He's always been like an ambiguous sort of compass point. Is he true north in that? Is he good? Or is he skewed? And there is a darkness to the arc of this season that I wonder if an audience will continue to be able to sort of side with him or forgive him or explain his behavior.
Yeah, because in a way he's like one of those classic, like, Clint Eastwood kind of characters, in a way where, like, he's carrying out very violent stuff, supposedly on, you know, not necessarily on the side of the bad guys, although you're involved with it to some extent in this series. But is there a sense that he's slightly enjoying how good he is at dealing with all of these extreme situations?
I think everybody in the world enjoys being good at something, you know? Sometimes I like to dream that I'm a good footballer, and gives me great pleasure to be on the field and expressing myself that way.
Yeah.
But being a good footballer and being a good assassin is two very different things, you know? I think that maybe there was, I mean, you're always joyful to be able to survive a situation, as he does it many times in the first series. But I think that is no longer the case in the second one. He is... how to explain it. This skill set that he has is absolutely being put to bad use, and there's nothing that he can do about that. And he's been putting that skill set to heinous use for the last year between the end of season one and beginning of season two. And it's taken its toll on his soul. And we find him at the beginning of season two in a very dark place. And I think he's unable to cope with the situation, and expresses itself through alcoholism, through, like, additional violence, sloppiness in his work. It's a real roller coaster he goes on this shit.
Yeah, we see that etched on your face. I was looking at, there's some quite close-ups where you're the weary kind of, the weary tone you have is fascinating, because violence, you know, that you have to completely kind of go through. You are a violent character in the show, and every time you kind of have a moment, you don't barely have a moment's rest before you have another challenge when it comes to people being violent towards you. Is that when you see in the scripts there's another spectacular set piece, action violence set piece involving your character, do you now look forward to those, filming and making those, or is it slightly like, are you better at it, and do you think, oh yeah, I can now do these, or have you always had the skill set to do that right from the start?
I don't know if I've always had the skill set. It's definitely something that I've honed over the last two seasons of the show. But absolutely, if I see that Elliot's about to get into a scrap, I'm like, Yeah, okay, cool. How can we make this the biggest, most dynamic, or most interesting fight scene that we've seen on television so far? I remember when we did the first season, one of the action guys, Chris Webb, was just like, this is going to be the best fight sequence on British television ever. And I was like, bro, okay, that's a massive claim. We'll see. And then it was very easy to say after the scene, the edit, that like I'd never seen anything like that on TV. And now I'm sort of like constantly hunting that, not prestige, but have an ambition. And I think everybody in Gangs of London has the ambition that let's make this better than the last one. Let's make this more interesting than the last one. Let's what will make this fight scene sequence stand out from anything that's ever been recorded, let alone just on British television. We've already broken that bar. Where are we going next with it? And that doesn't necessarily mean scale. That doesn't mean like, you know, I mean, we had a building fall down in the last season, but it doesn't mean that it always has to be a massive guy, or it has to be a fight scene on a train. There are other ways to make it like nuanced and interesting and specific. And I think that's what we're constantly chasing. You know, we don't need explosions for it to be captivating.
Right, absolutely, yeah. And when it must be such a technically complicated thing to do, those fights and that physicality. Do you think actually, well, you mentioned your footballer. I know you play football a lot. Does even that help you in the physicality, deal with the physicality of it?
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, like everything comes from your core, you know, your explosiveness, your balance, your robustness. And I think football is a great sport for core stability and engaging that. And I think there's no football skills that I've yet to use on Gangs of London. And thankfully, no Gangs of London skills that I've used on the football pitch either.
Right. But
yeah, I mean, any sort of athletic endeavor tends to help something else as well, you know.
As a massive Arsenal fan, I have to ask you an Arsenal-related question. I apologise to my podcast colleagues who will be annoyed that I am bringing up Arsenal. What I'm going to. Which, if you could, one Arsenal player, you know, current or old, to get a cameo role in Gangs of London, so you could act alongside them. Who would you pick?
I think it'd have to be TT because he's the most charismatic. You know,
he is. Isn't he?
At the same time, I feel like Tony Adams is sort of salt of the earth London. It'd be good to have him represented on screen. I don't want to, I could go for a whole roster, but like that's a question I wasn't expecting. That's a very good one.
Thanks.
But yeah, Thierry's had a lot of screen experience already, so I think he'd slot in quite nicely.
Yeah, and he is incredibly charismatic. You're right. You're absolutely right. Yeah. And Tony Adams is going to be doing Strictly. I mean, you know. So.
Is he actually?
That's yeah, he is.
What?
He absolutely is. Yeah. Tony Adams dancing, because I know you're a dancer as well. So, yeah.
Oh, goodness. Yeah. I'm going to see if I can get one of those studio tickets for that now. I'll queue up or whatever.
You'll be able to get it, I bet. Yeah. back to the Gangs of London properly. Sure. There is, we should mention, there is a time jump of a year from the last series to this series. And do you think that adds a whole other level of fascination, doesn't it? Because I like the way it kind of just puts little plot points in as to what people have been going through in that year into that first episode and so on. It's a clever device in a way, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, like, no one really likes exposition. Like, happening because of that and this, that, the other. But I think it also, not carrying straight on from the last bit, means that, oh, there's intrigue and fascination. Like, oh, what's happened in this last year? And if we can show that through performances or like little nuggets of information, like drip feed it or breadcrumb it, then interesting. Like, it's just technically interesting in terms of storytelling. It's interesting in terms of like the challenge of carrying the weight of a year that the audience hasn't seen and make them intrigued as to what's happened, you know? But yeah, the last year in Elliot's life has been major.
Clearly, yeah, absolutely. Is it also because the show is so elaborate and, you know, it's got like so many VFX, so many, and it seems that you're not in can be spectacular. There's an incredible house invasion sequence at the end of episode one. When you see the finished episodes, it must be like a weird experience to see all of this stuff that you're in the middle of that you might not necessarily know exactly what's going on in the other kind of strands.
Yeah, you know, it keeps it interesting for me, actually. When we're in production, I tend to focus completely on Elliot's arc. Like, I'll do the read through of everybody else and then I'll sort of remove their stories from my script so that I'm very focused on that. And then it also means that I get to watch like 50% of the show as a fan, because maybe once upon a time I knew what happened, but I don't know what the changes are. And I get to watch everybody give their performances rather than have this knowing like, okay, this is going to happen then. That's going to happen afterwards. I was able to, when we had our cast and crew screening of the first episode, to watch that home invasion and be like, bruh, y'all, like just be surprised by it. And I get that from not being too involved in what other people are doing whilst we're producing it.
When you get the scripts and how do they look like with all the action sequences? Are they kind of, you know, stage directions all there? Is it kind of complicated? Yeah.
Because there's very rarely much dialogue during the action sequences, it's then just like a block of text that who's reading stage directions on the day has to sort of make really dynamic rather than just, and then also who just sat there like reading it, like it would be much easier to just see this. And it's not as captivating in text form as it obviously is when you see it live.
Yeah.
But also it changes. Like what the writer envisages is not necessarily what the location looked like. So, or what the stunt coordinator or designer envisages. So that's literally just a blueprint. It's like, oh, we think these things might happen. And then how those things happen will be almost entirely different from how it's read in the first instance.
What do you prefer doing those actions? There's a scene in, I won't spoil anything. There's a scene in episode one where you've got a one-on-one scene with another character, which is very tense and you don't know which way it's going to go. Do you kind of enjoy doing those scenes as much, if not more, than the action scenes?
You know what? Like, I do look forward to the action sequences. I mean, we've got an excellent team in the stunt department and I've worked with them for a couple of years now. And like, we've got a really great relationship. So those are all always joyful experiences. But sometimes when you've just got one other scene partner and you've got great material and you get to, like, you know, spar with each other and do the acting, that's also really wonderful as well.
Yeah, I bet. And finally, without giving anything away, is there one sequence that you particularly loved filming for season two that you can tell us about?
Not necessarily the one that I loved the most to shoot, but there is one that I'm super excited by because I haven't seen it yet as well. I just knew that it was an action sequence around the middle of the series. And so as not to spoil it, I'll say, like, there's a very intense focus on sound, you know? And that was so exciting to read on the page because I was just like, oh, okay, that's, you know what I was saying earlier about like finding different ways to make the fights exciting. That made it for me. And I trust that Nima Nuritzadeh, the director, has crafted that in the edit perfectly. But I'm so looking forward to see how we achieved like dealing with sound in that particular sequence. Like, I'm excited for that, definitely.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Chopay, thank you so much for joining us up the Arsenal and congratulations on a brilliant performance in a great show. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much, man. Have a great day.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Right, let's get into the postbag and find out who's been giving us grief this week. Let's start with this one, which is going to pull randomly out of the air. Hi, guys. This is from Jamie Evans. I'm a big user of Letterboxd to keep track of movies I've watched, want to watch, etc. I'm yet to find an app as good for keeping up with TV progress and watch lists. Do you guys have any recommendations to keep on top of all the TV? Okay. So do either of you use, I mean, I'm assuming the way Kay is looking at me, the answer to that is no. But do you keep track of what you watch? Or has an app been even created that could contain the multitudes of show that you watch on a daily basis?
I contain multitudes.
You do?
No, I don't use an app at all. No.
To keep track of any of it?
It's all in my head.
I know, which is, you know, dangerous.
Yeah, Kate's referring to that. She thinks I'm non-compos mentis as I get older. I mean, it's true. I've made reference before to the fact that I have early onset, whatever.
No, memory loss.
So maybe, an app would be good, yeah.
Well, I don't use Letterboxd. I use Tracked to keep track of films that are in my watch list. Okay. But also, so on my phone, what have I got?
All the films you haven't watched each week.
All the films I should have watched for Empire and haven't. Yeah, I keep track of those.
I think just a normal pencil and pen.
What is this, the 1850s?
Pencil and pen.
A pencil and a pen. Nothing to write on, just two writing implements.
Pen.
Yes.
And a quill. Yeah.
There is an iOS app called Sofa. And in Sofa, you can have films, you can have books, you can have movies, video games, you can have all sorts of stuff. So I do have a list of media I would like to consume in an app called Sofa.
But also, why can't you just use your like the notes on your phone? I don't get it. Why
because that's chaos. Like, you know, I need
yeah, I use notes quite a lot.
Yeah, I use notes for all sorts of things.
Yeah.
But I like the fact that this, it like pulls in the artwork and it looks all nice. Oh, and it's like,
okay,
you know,
fine. I'm suggesting, who wrote in?
Jamie.
Okay, Jamie, use a quill and a paper.
Use two pens, a pen and a pencil, whichever you like.
Or use your note section. That would be my advice for you.
Right, okay. Yeah. There you go, Jamie. Problem solved. Oh, this is a long one.
Oh.
Chris Slynn says, question for the pod, is Boyd a Time Lord? Oh, okay. The evidence is as follows. One, how can anyone watch as much TV as Boyd does without some timey-wimey shenanigans? That's fair. Okay. Two, he watches stuff in advance, / way in advance, / too far in advance, / before it's been made. Also true.
Right.
Three, does he collect quote-unquote vintage trainers with an impeccable eye, or does he know which trainers to go back in time to collect? Well, frankly, I think if he could go back in time, he'd already have this jumper and we wouldn't be sitting here hearing about it. But four, he lives in London, probably, with the world's largest TV. This suggests his house is bigger on the inside.
Oh, this is good.
That's good.
Five, his diplomatic skills border on time lordiness. Six, he is close friends with people involved in Doctor Who. Has he been giving them plot ideas or stopping the truth of his immortal nature from being revealed? Seven, he has a collection of sidekicks. I think that's us, Kay.
What? I'm not his sidekick. He's my sidekick.
Oh, you've really got... Oh, yeah.
Are you a Time Lord, Boyd? Come on, answer the question.
I'd love the idea of it. Yeah, maybe I am. I didn't even know it. That's quite a Whovian storyline. Like, you know, someone is a Time Lord.
What, that you turn out to be a Time Lord?
Or, no, just someone is a Time Lord, but they don't know they are. Yeah, and they find out.
You're an unknowing Time Lord.
That's quite a good storyline. I might suggest that.
Pitch it to Russell.
Yeah,
pitch it to Russell. Okay. Russell, if you're listening, you can have that for free. Right, okay, Laurie K says, hi, I'm generally a scripted / comedy TV chap, but can you please take a look at The Mole on Netflix? Ooh. The only reality TV I'll watch.
Please, once
you get past
the animal.
American overproducedness of it, it is gripping with twists all over the place, and no one is watching.
What is it about?
The Mole? I have no idea. I just assumed Boyd would know.
I really hope it's not an informant, and I really
hope it's
about...
What channel did they say it's on?
Netflix.
Netflix. The Mole Netflix. Go on, Google The Mole Netflix. Let's see what
it
is.
Well, I'll go to my Netflix app rather than Google it.
Well, I'm just going to Google
The Mole. There are a couple
Netflix.
Of shows that have dropped on Netflix recently that, again, as I always bang on about, they didn't really publicise, and I didn't end up knowing about. Maybe this is one of them, yeah.
Netflix, The Mole.
The Mole. We're all having a look. Who is
a group of 14 American strangers undertake an array of physical and mental challenges.
Yes. I've heard about this. Yeah.
Oh, so it's like a kind of game show.
Yeah. Why is it called The Mole?
Isn't it a reality show? Yeah.
Because there is a mole in they have to.
Oh, I see. So one of them is a mole.
One of them is a mole. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Not an actual burrowing mole.
No, I'm not watching this, Laurie. Unless someone in this is an actual mole man, I'm not interested. Sorry.
The Mole Man.
Exactly that. Right. Teresa Richards says, hi, Team Pilot. Just catching up after my holiday and caught the review of The Bear. Firstly, how come none of you have watched the US version of Shameless? None of you call yourself a TV review show.
I have watched quite a bit of the US version of Shameless.
So Boyd hadn't watched it, but now he's gone back in time and watched it. So in this timeline, he has now watched the US Shameless.
Now, this is going back. I mean, I think there are there's loads of seasons of Shameless now, of the American Shameless. But I went back when it launched, probably 8 seasons ago or however much, I did watch quite a lot of it, and it's really good.
Well, she says,
William H. Macy is the main guy, and William H. Macy is fucking brilliant in everything. So I actually prefer his version in a way of that character.
Oh,
Frank.
Really?
Yeah. And the cast is great. The guy from
Jeremy Allen White.
Yes, I've just realised the relevance.
Yes, that's where this was going. Yes,
and he's great in it. And it's very diverse. It's kind of more. It feels much more. Obviously, Shameless. The British version hasn't been on for years, but it is really good. The American version, yeah. And I think it's great that it's lasted this long, I have to say.
We have a message here from G, whose first message simply says, how do I DM? Is this a DM? Yes, this is a DM. You're fine. And G says...
Is that my mum?
It could be your mum. My 15-year-old son, Boyd, doesn't... No, sorry. My 15-year-old son doesn't watch any TV. He used to watch Doctor Who, Cobra Kai, and lots of other shows, but nothing anymore. He loves movies, MCU, Star Wars, etc., but has no interest in any of their Disney Plus shows. His friends are all the same. Is this the future? Will the next generation, the TikTok generation, kill TV? Well, that's a bleak slice of the future, isn't it?
No, it's fine.
Boyd says no.
No.
Boyd says that's not going to happen.
That means it's not going to happen.
Yeah. Do you think that's what's happening? Like when I'm watching House of the Dragon, all these kids are just sitting around just watching endless TikTok reels.
Yeah, obviously.
See what I did there? TikTok Reels. I blended two things together, Reels and TikTok, as if they're the same thing. Yeah.
Okay, great.
Calm down with the kids. It's good. So no. G, the answer is no, because Boyd has said so, and he's a Time Lord. Right. John Morgan has sent an incredibly long message that I almost certainly am not going to read out in full, but I will begin it. I've just finished This England and realised, apart from in the lead up to it, you never discussed it. Then it dawned on me that there's been nothing on Twitter, like we've all taken a collective decision not to talk about it. And I sort of agree and see why. Part of me almost feels guilty for watching it, as it was clearly too soon for such a serious and tragic event in recent history. He also writes lots of other things, but I think it's along those lines.
I keep meaning to watch it. I haven't watched it yet.
I did watch more of it, I have to say. I haven't watched the final episode, but it's really weird with This England, because what basically happened is that the Queen's death happened. And so it was a victim of the fact that among all shows, they had to delay this one.
Yeah.
You know, and so sure enough, they delayed it, I think, even just a week, but that meant that everyone's coverage of it had already been printed. Like, you know, we did a preview of it in Heat, and that came out, and because it was cancelled after we'd already gone to press.
And you gave it 5 stars, didn't you?
I think I gave it 4.
4, yeah.
Did you?
4, yeah. And then, by the time it was on, there was also an event. There was going to be a screening with a Q&A with Kent Branagh and the co-. That got cancelled as well. And they didn't replace it. They didn't, you know, they didn't restage that event. Whereas most, the BBC had quite a few events they had to cancel, but they did put them on again. I hosted one of them.
So it's kind of gone
by the wayside.
I think also because by then, real-time politics was far.
That's true.
Yeah, that is true.
Everything that happened felt a bit.
We
entered a new hellscape.
Can you imagine how hot, I mean, Michael Winterbottom directed Kenneth Branagh. The cast is incredible. I would say this about it. I think it's much better than people have given it credit for. I agree with the point, maybe it's too soon. But the stuff about what happened in the hospitals and how old people particularly were taken into care homes, all of that, that is dealt with really, really well and reminds you of the horror at the core of that situation. Whilst there is an entertainment value in Ken Branagh playing Boris Johnson, which is just quite funny all the way through. Dealing with a little rat dog, particularly, like that is like a running joke almost that works quite well as an amusing side. But
was the care home element to it better than the Jodie Comer, Stephen Graham?
That was so good.
That was fantastic.
I wouldn't say better, because that whole 90-minute film was
on one thing.
This is like, it's woven into the narrative, is the fact that these horrors are happening in care homes. The best person in it, though, and now I'm going to have to look up his name, is the guy who plays Dominic Cummings. He is brilliant in it, I have to say. And obviously, Cumberbatch played Dominic Cummings in
Brexit, the Uncivil War.
Yeah. But this guy, he kind of acts a bit, which kind of works really well, because Dominic Cummings is talking this absolute nonsense and he's such an egomaniacal, pretentious bellend, but this guy plays him very straight and it works brilliantly. Simon Paisley Day is the actor, so I think he's the MVP of the whole series.
Interesting.
Is it quite Machiavellian
enough? Beyond Machiavellian,
as John points out, does this count as a true crime drama?
It's a good point.
Yeah, but I don't think it was so much that we made a decision not to talk about it. We couldn't review it.
It was embargoed till
because it got moved and then it got embargoed. Then we didn't see it, and there's like 1,000 things to watch the week. I still haven't watched any of it, so that's largely the reason why we haven't talked about it. Only Boydie has seen it.
Yeah, so it's fascinating.
That is the reason why, John. Right, time for one more, and it's going to come from Gold Coast James, who I can only assume is in Australia. And he says, Andor. Hi, team. Not a huge amount of love from you so far. Somewhat understandable. It's been a slow burn. However, some love for episode 6, please. Made the build-up worthwhile. And no yucca plants in the corner of the volume in any scenes. Yes, Gold Coast James, that is absolutely right. Not a yucca in sight, nor a ficus, for that matter. I know, well, we've already discussed this, haven't we? Yes, it's definitely stepped up a notch. I can't yet say whether this is going to be my favourite Star Wars show. Obviously, I did like Mando, but it's certainly making the right noises. Like, slow burn is right. I wasn't sold on the first segment, which was the first 3 episodes. I thought the 4th episode was an interesting one. But now, since obviously we watched those all early on when we first reviewed it, now that I'm watching it week by week, I'm quite taken with it. I am quite taken with it. And Cassian Andor, who is just the least essential character in Star Wars history, they've somehow made me care about it. And that's an impressive achievement in and of itself. So yeah, yay for Andor. Yay for actual locations and no volumes.
The volume.
Yeah.
I really enjoying it as well. I keep forgetting to mention that in my what I've been watching, but I have been keeping up with it, and it's because it's its own story.
Yes,
it created a thing. It could have, you could just completely ignore Star Wars in a sense. It's set in that universe, obviously, and there's lots of references and there's lots of, you know, machines that are
so
Star
Wars. Other than the fact that the Empire's in it and it's a character from a Star Wars movie.
What I mean is the storyline and characters and the plotting is all self-contained so that it works within itself as a thing.
Fair.
Is what I'm saying.
Fair.
It's got its own politics in a sense.
It does.
Yeah,
yes,
that's what I would say. Does. I had a quite funny, here's a funny note that I was sent. Actually, no, you're on it as well, James.
Oh, am I?
Henry Ellison just finished Cobra Kai, which is great, but the acting is terrible. Did you see this one?
I mean, it is.
I mean, it is. It's true. What other shows are great despite their bad acting? I thought that was a really good question.
What shows are great despite the bad acting?
Yeah.
Yeah, like Cobra Kai is an odd one. Like, I've not pressed on with this most recent season because the first episode for me wasn't funny, and it wasn't trying to be funny, but as we said, it doesn't have the dramatic chops to get by without humor. Yeah. So I kind of thought, I don't know why I'm watching this.
Yeah,
I may press on with it. I may watch the rest of it. It's on
yeah.
the list.
Yeah. But there are quite a few shows that have certain roles that are quite bad. Yeah.
Come on then. Name. Kind of,
no, yeah, name them, boy. Name them. Name them. Shame them.
Name just one.
Yeah.
You don't
give
have to
us
say
an
which
example.
Is the bad character. Just say a show God. That's a no, victim.
You can't remember.
I have to think of it more.
You can't remember any.
I think of it more. Someone also messaged me about Babylon Berlin, which I mentioned a couple of times. We've all ignored that. And that is, a lot of people are saying that's one
yes.
of the great unsung
people are saying
shows.
That's fantastic. Yes.
We need
what
to check
channel
that
is
out.
It on?
It's on Sky Atlantic / Now.
Well, I think that is all we have time for in terms of post-baggery. But let's move on to news. And where better to start than the trailer for Picard Season 3? Now, as you will know, I had absolutely no truck whatsoever with Picard Season 2 on account of it being absolutely dreadful. However, just when I thought I was out, like Michael Corleone, they pull me back in, and this trailer for Season 3 has got me all excited all over again. All is forgiven. All is forgiven. And I'm back.
They knew what they were doing.
I'm back because Geordi's there, Riker's there, Troy's there, Crusher's there, you know, Worf is there. Love Worf so much. You know, all the crew are back together again, and I'm stoked. I'm psyched.
His eyebrows have shot up.
They have. My eyebrows are on the ceiling. It's just, yeah, I'm very, very excited about this. Kay, you must be over the moon at the thought of watching Picard Season 3.
Mm-hmm. That's what I'm saying.
Have you ever watched any Star Trek, Kay?
No. Yeah.
None of the iterations?
Ever?
No.
I don't believe that.
Never a film?
I don't believe
it. None of the films? This is what normal people do with their lives.
No, it's not. Look, you'd have to grow up in a cave to have seen no Star Trek in your entire life.
No.
Because, like, okay, right, Kay, what year were you born in? 1980. Mm-hmm. So you were primed for Star Trek The Next Generation, like ready to go all the way through that, straight into Deep Space Nine, Voyager, like your whole childhood was like Star Trek's golden era. And what were you doing?
I had friends and I went out just enjoyed
did
life.
You?
Yes, I did. Thanks very much. Yeah.
And we've already established it's not like you're particularly discerning with your TV. So like, you know.
Oh.
So
oh
like, I don't understand how you didn't get your Janeway on at some point.
I watch a wide array of shows, okay? Uh-huh. Just because I watch Strictly doesn't mean I've got no taste. Now, I would like some support from the listeners. Someone out there must agree with me that, you know, you can like different things. You don't have to just like Star Trek.
I don't understand.
You are slagging me off for liking Strictly, right? And I'm just saying that doesn't mean then I'm not discerning. It just means that I enjoy, like, you know, entertainment shows as well. Wholesome entertainment shows.
Mm. James does not compute.
I couldn't
fine
have.
Anyway, the long and short is I don't watch Star Trek,
and you've never but not a single episode or film.
No,
that's actually quite impressive.
I don't know how else to communicate this with you.
No, but I'm just saying it makes you, you know, and I don't use the word lightly, a bit of a freak. Like, but you didn't see
one to no one, James.
But you didn't get whisked to see The Voyage Home in the cinema or anything like that.
It's words, you're just saying words.
No, none of it.
No.
Wow.
James, can I just let you know this? Like, there are millions of people
no,
out there.
No, I don't believe this.
Similarly, have never. I'm not the slightest bit interested in
sure,
Star Trek.
I believe the interest part.
I'm just saying.
But I think it is impossible to have, at some point from 1980 to today, to have not turned on the TV and been forced to watch, like, some Jean-Luc Picard thing.
Why are all these people forcing
people? Exactly, why would it be forced? I've got
forced
remote control.
Star Trek
because
watching.
There was a period in the sort of like 80s and early 90s where Sky One basically played Star Trek The Next Generation on repeat like 24 hours a day.
Yeah, so I'm guessing that lots of people didn't switch on Sky One.
Yeah, okay.
He literally can't compute it.
I can't.
Yeah, that is hilarious.
All right,
some would say the same thing for you about, I don't know, EastEnders, Coronation.
Yeah, but I've gone out of my way to actively avoid them. So that's a slightly different thing. But I have watched an episode of EastEnders. When I was a student at university, I watched an episode of EastEnders.
I can't with him today. Yeah.
I can't deal with both of you, actually. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Okay. So you won't be watching Khan. All right, we've established that. Fine. So also in news, I would like to point out there was a trailer for The Witching Hour, the Mayfair Witches thing. Is it called The Witching Hour or is it called The Mayfair Witches? I can't remember. The thing that is part of the Immortaverse or whatever it is with Interview with the Vampire. So it's the Anne Rice Witches to go with the Anne Rice Vampires. Okay. And it's got Alexandra Daddario as Rowan Mayfair. And there's like hints of Lasher in there. And there's things. I enjoyed the trailer.
I mean, we still don't know when we're fucking getting into
it. We don't know when we're getting any of it. No. No. So, you know, it's all a bit academic at this point. But I'm quite, you know, psyched.
It's academic.
What would you like to... Kate, give us some news. Give us a bit of news. What's interesting you?
Well, it's not necessarily of interest. I just pulled this together before it came in, but I saw that there's a second season trailer for The Mosquito Coast, which I thought you guys might be interested in.
Did you enjoy The Mosquito Coast?
Did you watch it?
Absolutely. I watched the trailer.
Right. I see. So you've seen the trailer for season one and now presumably the trailer for season two.
Yeah. So anyway, there's a trailer out for season two of The Mosquito Coast. And I did watch the second. I haven't watched the first series. I watched the second season. It looks very good. And that's what I had to tell you. In case anyone was interested, you see, it wasn't of interest to me, but there wasn't any news that I was particularly interested
in. I see. Well,
so I was doing a service for the listeners.
That's good of you. Yeah. So we reviewed Mosquito Coast at one point on the show. We watched the first episode. I'll be honest, I didn't press on with it.
No.
I didn't love it.
I watched a couple more episodes. I am surprised that there was a second season, I have to say.
Let me tell you, it picks up apparently with the family escaping Mexico and heading deep into the Guatemalan jungle. I'm not sure if that entices you further, where they get caught in a conflict between a local drug lord and his family. So, no bueno.
I mean, it does star Justin Theroux, who I would watch in anything.
And this is based on his uncle's book.
It is.
So it's a bit of a family connection.
And of course, he had a dinner. You see, he posted a picture of him having dinner with Louis Theroux last week, which was lovely to see. So I might give it a go. I might, you know, maybe I'll watch the first of the new season. I know you hate it, James, when people skip over.
It does make me a little anxious.
Makes you anxious. Mm. Gives you anxiety.
I don't like it.
But I love Justin Theroux. Justin Theroux's dog's Instagram is one of the greatest Instagram things ever.
What is the dog called?
Is it Cobra, I think?
The dog he owned with Jennifer Aniston?
Did you just call Jennifer Lannister?
Jennifer Lannister. Now that is something I would watch.
Jennifer of...
Lannister. House Lannister. Yeah.
I think it might even be new. It just is, though. I think, yeah, it's like a rescue. I think it's a rescue
dog. I knew they had a dog together, though.
Maybe it is that one. But yeah, it's got its own Instagram and it's fantastic. And I'm fully in favour of Justin Theroux. Yeah.
Good.
Did you see the BBC have released new photos of the third and final season of Happy Valley?
Yes.
See?
Was it a picture of Sarah Lancashire in a police uniform?
Well, listeners, I am literally turning my laptop around to show.
Oh, the classic shot.
Turn it around. And it literally is.
Now,
if
amazing.
It ain't broke, don't
she has got
it.
A bloody nose.
She does
though.
Have a bloody nose.
So that's an interesting
a ruddy, bloody
image.
Nose.
She's got a ruddy, bloody nose. And also, there's a picture of a new picture of her nemesis, Tommy Lee Royce, played by James Norton, who, and this is in the press release. I'm just going to read this bit of the press release. Catherine is pictured with a bloodied nose in the aftermath of a police raid, while Tommy Lee Royce, James Norton, with a radically different look, is seen in his prison cell.
Let's see the radically different look. He's got a beard.
He grew a beard.
He's got a beard.
Grew a beard.
There you go. But
I almost didn't recognise him.
I know. It's extraordinary. But all joshing aside, let's just bathe in the fact.
We're getting one more season.
One more series of one of the greatest TV crime dramas ever made.
So good.
In the world. Other than Poirot. Do you know Kate's a Poirot obsessive?
Are you? Yeah. You're a Poirot obsessive.
We'll
have to deal with that another time. But I'm extraordinarily excited about the imminent arrival of Happy Valley. I think the BBC, I don't know this at all for sure, but I think they're going to hold it back right till Christmas.
Yeah, they should do.
Because it's the ultimate, you know, Christmas drama treat, isn't it?
Yeah, real treat.
Really festive, feel good. Yeah.
Nothing sums up
psychotic.
Christmas. Yeah. Yeah.
I think they are. I think it's going to be Christmas, yeah. So, and that's my guess. But I cannot wait. Yeah. So there you go.
Did you see the bit where they announced that House of the Dragon is going to be four seasons of 10 episodes each. So it's just going to be four seasons.
I totally missed that.
Yeah, four seasons and out. That's it.
How did I miss that?
I don't know.
I'm getting really high pitched.
How did I miss that? Yeah, it's going to be just four seasons. That's it. Wow. Four and out. I mean, this is probably because they seem to skip like a decade in between every episode.
There are time jumps.
So it's just like, oh my God. Like, even the most, well, I said the most recent, the one but one, they said 6 years has passed since the previous episode. You're like, has it?
Yes.
Yeah. So they're going to run out of time.
And they do, every now and then they have a clunky little moment of exposition, don't they, where one character says to the other, it's been 7 years. Thanks. Sort of subtle
thanks
reminder.
For that.
That's why we all look older. And well, our wiggy wigs.
Except for Matt Smith.
Except for Matt Smith.
Who looks exactly the same.
Yes. There's lots of Netflix news.
Is there?
This week, which is interesting. Industry, I think.
Yeah. Oh, there's this ratings thing.
There's the ratings thing. That's one of them, yes. So Netflix has agreed to let Barb, which is the British ratings company, who do the official ratings, I keep saying the word ratings, for all the channels, day in, day out. They do overnights and then they do, consolidated figures for all the TV channels. But of course, Netflix has always stood alone and refused to have its ratings measured by any of the official ratings people publishing it. But they've agreed in the UK only to let Barb measure their ratings. So we will know literally how, for first time ever, how Netflix shows face up against how they measure in ratings terms against other channels. And apparently in one of the reports, I think it was in Variety, it said that rumor has it that Netflix, a lot of shows on Netflix have been watched by more than people watch Channel 4 and Channel 5, for example. You know, if you like, most Channel 4, Channel 5 shows are watched by maybe like 2-3 million people. Kind of, and that's a good amount of viewers.
But is that new? Is that breaking?
Well, I think it's interesting because you just don't know. I wouldn't necessarily have assumed it. They're so mysterious about it that, and all they say is, you know, millions of people watched the first 2 minutes of this episode of this new thing. But this way, they're going to actually measure it in a way that compares it properly to what's going on in the other, in its rival channels. So I think that's really interesting.
Yeah, that's
so
interesting.
That's one. The other industry news is that they released, listen to this, Netflix released 1,024 original TV episodes in Q3. More than five times any other service.
Jesus.
And it's a record breaker of any TV channel of any kind, the number of original TV episodes. 1,024, only in one quarter.
How many of them were thematically connected to The Witcher?
How many of them were written by Ryan Murphy?
That's true, yeah.
Or produced by Ryan Murphy. So that's incredible.
That's bananas.
Doesn't stop there, okay? There's more. There's more Netflix stuff. Dahmer, the aforementioned Jeffrey Dahmer show, is now already, it only dropped 3 weeks ago. It's the second biggest English language TV show in Netflix history.
Ugh.
I find that depressing.
So do I.
It's already doing better than, you know, Bridgerton, etc. And that's, it's only been on.
To be fair, they've been marketing the shit out of it.
Yeah, but they really market Bridgerton.
But you know what? They didn't even need to market the shit out of it because as soon as it dropped, it was an absolute blockbuster hit. People are obsessed with this stuff.
Billboards in central London, it's on buses. Like, they've spent quite a lot of money to push that. I genuinely would be fascinated to know how they decide that Dharma is going to get millions spent on above the line advertising, and then they'll just drop other stuff without even a press release, and it's just there. Like, but how do they decide what they're just going to chuck out on there, and what Chris calls a knockdown ginger release, where they just ring the doorbell and run away, and then
knockdown ginger,
and then and whether they're going to take Darwin, they're going to go massive and turn it into this huge event. Like, it seems very random. I'm sure it's not. I'm sure there's a massive strategy document.
It's a total strategy, which is that the strategy is we don't need the fucking critics. Fuck, screw them.
Mm.
What we need, we don't need, you know, coverage in old school, you know.
Media.
We'll advertise the shit out of it.
Or not.
Well, but advertise it once it's on as well. Once it's there, has arrived, and people can get into it, and they put it at the top page of your interface.
Yeah.
And it's there, this huge picture of Jeffrey Dahmer's face, and people watch it. It is extraordinary. But do you know what its biggest show is of all time?
The Witcher.
Squid.
Squid? Mm. No. Oh, it's not Squid Game, by the way. This is English language.
Right.
Yeah. No. What is the biggest one? I did know this, but I've forgotten.
You forget. It's Stranger Things.
What was Stranger Things?
The last series of Stranger Things. Okay. 1.35 billion hours in its first 28 days, whatever the fuck that means.
Yeah, I'd be interested to see how this translates when there's actually some kind of third-party verification of the figures.
Yes, I agree.
You know.
Yeah.
But interesting.
It's a number crunch.
Oh, since we've number crunched, I think that heralds the end of news. So let's move on to this week's reviews. And we begin as indeed we should, with The Peripheral. This is based on the William Gibson novel of the same name and stars Chloe Grace Moretz and Jack Rayner as two siblings trying to make ends meet in a future in which the lines between cyberspace and real space are rather more blurry than, for example, your average game of World of Warcraft. So, Boydie, yes. Let's hear about your vision of Peripheral. Like Peripheral Vision.
Yeah, very good. I was quite looking forward to this because I'm a science fiction fan, unlike Kay Ribeiro, for example. I'm kind of like probably like halfway between Kay Ribeiro's complete refusal to have any truck with science fiction as an entire genre and fantasy, by the way.
Refuse to engage with it.
Yeah. Refuse to engage with it, furious that we have to review it.
Yeah.
And James at the other end of the scale,
who lives there.
The annoying end.
Yeah. And learning everyone's character name by the within 2 minutes, etc. But I do like I quite like a hard sci-fi show, and I've actually read some William Gibson books about this. This is based on a William Gibson novel. I think William Gibson is a brilliant writer.
He is.
The books I've read, I haven't read this book. Have you read this book?
I have not read this book.
So I would describe. I have to say the build up, the press campaign, the marketing, the title sequence, which is beautiful, by the way, I thought, would lead you to believe this is going to be something different to what I think it actually ended up being from the first episode that I've watched.
What did you think it was going to be? And what?
The description, I need to find it. It was all about in a far place at the end of the universe or something, Chloe Grace Moretz's character is dabbling in stuff she doesn't understand and with her brother and then transported to another universe in another time. It's all very like highfalutin. I was expecting it to be more like, I don't know, something. What it ends up being, right, for me is, it's like Ready Player One, Steven Spielberg from Ready Player One meets Westworld meets Tenet.
Well, it would be Westworld. Obviously, this is produced by Jonah Nolan and Lisa Joy.
Yeah, it's produced by the Westworld team. And it's got a kind of Tenet-y time travel thing going on where basically one future, which is basically London in the future, taps into another bit of the future where Chloe Grace Moretz and her brother Rod, the Jack Rayner character, and get them involved in London in a different future from their future. But it's all set in the future, right? So I found it quite confusing. But it feels like a slightly smaller scale, I think, than what I was expecting. And if you think of Westworld, actually, I mean, Westworld got more and more epic visually, I think, as it wore on. By the time the last season ended, which I had massive issues with, it still looked phenomenal. And, like, you know, vast cityscapes and this, I mean, I'm not, it shows you how far TV's come, whereby I'm slightly complaining about the visuals of a show that does have a future cityscape of London, which looks quite interesting and is semi-convincing. But equally, a lot of it is just Chloe Grace Moretz playing a computer game, essentially. Like, you're watching her taking part in a computer game, and literally her and her brother are computer game experts, seemingly. And I'm like, you've left out the whole computer game element of the show out of your marketing, because I think you don't want to alienate.
I wonder why.
Yeah, I wonder why. You don't want to alienate people who aren't into that at all, you know. And a lot of it is just kind of watching them getting involved in this, as I say, computer gamey style adventure. And I just wasn't engaged with that particularly. I didn't find it particularly engaging. I quite like the idea of what was happening and the kind of...
I didn't mind that concept.
Oh, okay. You liked it more than me.
I thought she was
Kay's good. Kay's a massive sci-fi fan. yeah, she's great. Jack Rayner's great. They're both kind of charismatic. But I just thought it was a bit kind of exhausting, that first episode, watching, establishing this kind of... adventure. Carry on.
I know what you mean. No, I know what you mean. You are just watching someone playing a game. Like, so it's kind of like, why am I watching this? But I thought Chloe Moretz was very good and convincing in that role. But other than that, I've got nothing much to add to the conversation other than saying it was brain scrambling. But I did enjoy it. I enjoyed it much more than I thought I was, because I was very grumpy this week.
You were very grumpy. Oh my gosh. Our WhatsApp group was an absolute state.
It was a bin fire.
Yeah.
I was furious. I mean, I'm going to come to that later on. We'll talk about another of the shows. But out of the two, you know, by the time we got to this, because I watched Gangs first and then this, so actually it was sweet relief. In terms of, like, it wasn't very violent.
No.
So I could deal with the geeky stuff. And
I've just found the description that I was referring to before about, you know, the ambition of this show. This is from the official press release. It gives viewers a hallucinatory glimpse into the fate of mankind and what lies beyond.
No, not that.
No.
Not that.
It's like someone playing.
Whereas actually it's someone playing a video. Yeah. So It's great, and I loved it. Now, for so many reasons, but I loved the concept of it. I thought it was really cool. Obviously, it's not 100% original, but it was an interesting sort of twist on that virtual reality blend idea. But I like the fact that they used the grammar and the livery of video games. There's a bit where she goes in, and weirdly, she's pretending to be her brother, who is Jet Raynor, so yeah, she's using his avatar when she's in the game. But she's on a bike, and the way it's sort of laying out the path thing on the road feels like many games that I've played, and I just thought that's kind of cool. I like the ideas of it. I liked the it takes some unexpected turns. So there's obviously, I've got the first three. There's a big firefight in episode two, which is, again, it's really interestingly staged, and it sets characters up in a way that maybe you didn't realize they were going. There is some, I can't remember, is it in episode one or two where there is some, shall we say, ocular trauma? I think if it had been episode
it's one.
Okay.
It is in one.
That's a lot. That is a lot. The eye bit, I was like, oh, come now. In fact, both shows this week have had scenes of very upsetting eye trauma.
Thank you for noting that.
Yeah, I did. I was like, well, we'll get onto that in a bit. But yeah, I thought this was good. Also, Boyd, this was lavish. It felt really expensive. It felt really slick. Like, it felt like it had, like, you know, off cinematic production values at times, which I really enjoyed. It's directed by Vincenzo Natali, who did Cube, which is one of my favorite kind of lo-fi science fiction films. I really, really enjoyed this. And I'm fascinated to see where it's going, because I think the concept is very strong. And I think the central performances, Chloe Grace Moretz and Jet Raynor, are very good. And also, who plays the woman who is the almost like the dungeon master in the game? Because she's one of her. Oh, I know your face, think why I know your face. Why do I know your face?
Very confusing, because you were saying that while pointing to Boyd. Yeah,
I know. Why do I know your face, Boyd? Why do I know your face? But I can't think what her name is. So we have just looked it up. It is, in fact, Charlotte Riley from Peaky Blinders. But she's really good in this as well. And yes, I enjoy this a lot. This is where I live. This is what I want from TV. Give me more of the peripheral, please. It is excellent. So, good. Yes, The Peripheral then, which airs on Prime Video on Friday, the 21st of October. Right. Next this week, we have Somewhere Boy, in which a father keeps his son indoors until he's a teenager with tales of monsters lying in wait outside the house. Of course, when his father dies, young Danny must navigate the real world, monsters and all. Now, of course, who better to talk about Somewhere Boy than our very own Somewhere Boyd, except Kay wants to talk about this one because Gangs of London has traumatised her. So, Kay, tell us about Somewhere Boy, in which someone does not have their eye viciously removed from their head.
God, yeah. I mean, that is a bonus this week. This is one show that's not going to give you nightmares. Well, actually, it kind of will.
It might.
It's very messed up. Mm-hmm. Basically, as you said, Steve, the dad in this, played by Rory Keenan, and his young son, called Danny, Lewis Gribben, go and live in the middle of nowhere because the dad's theory is, and he's clearly in the midst of a breakdown.
Oh, yeah.
His theory is the mother's just been killed in a car crash, and he wants to protect his son from the monsters that lurk outside. And so they go to this house, they live in there, and the son is not allowed to go outside.
Yeah.
And all they do is watch black and white movies with happy endings and listen to records. And yeah, that's about it. The dad occasionally ventures out to get food and has takes very extreme measures to ensure that the son doesn't ever want to do that, which I found. I mean, the whole thing is quite bizarre and unsettling and upsetting, but that scene was just like, what the hell? But essentially it's about, you know, this tragedy occurs and then the young boy has to venture out into the real world, and it's about how he copes with that. And I just thought the young boy, Lewis Gribben, was fantastic in this role, because it's kind of like every time, when he eventually left the house and he was living in the real world, he goes to live with his auntie, played by Lisa, is it McGrillis?
Yes.
Yes, who is fantastic. She's from Mum, who I was obsessed with.
Mm.
When he goes and lives there, it's kind of like this mix of like, he's in awe of just everyday stuff like Instagram, the television being in colour, stuff like that. But also it's just really kind of sad and upsetting and like disturbing to see how much like he has lost. His childhood has been lost in a way because he's been so sheltered. And, you know, obviously he's got Stockholm syndrome for it, but also he just thinks his dad was just doesn't think his dad was doing anything wrong. And it's kind of disturbing and upsetting, but also there's something, I don't know, I thought it was quite, it's well done, because also you just think, well, actually, in a way, because he meets his cousin, who's quite messed up in his own ways, a young boy.
He's a bellend.
he's a bellend, but he's adapting different personalities as they do in teenage, you know, in teenage years to, you know, he's just very shape-shifting. And actually the young boy, you know, the isolated chap, Danny, is quite confident in himself, even if he isn't in the real, you know, in his surroundings, because he's a fish out of water. And it's kind of interesting, this dynamic between the two, because whereas Danny's quite comfortable in his own skin, this other, who's the character who plays his cousin? I haven't written it down, helpfully.
The actor
Aaron,
who plays cousin.
Yeah, it's
Samuel Bottomley.
Yeah, who plays Aaron, his cousin, his, yeah, as James said, bellend cousin. It's a nice dynamic. I'm interested to see where that goes. But yeah, I thought it was good. It's very dark, but very gripping.
Dark and gripping.
Yeah, I really liked it. I thought that it's a really tough, it's a huge sell, isn't it, to convince the viewers that a father, even in the extreme circumstances, and they build up to showing you what exactly happened to the mum / wife, don't they? To push this dad to the measure of literally not letting his son out of the house at all.
Yeah,
where they live in this isolated place, and that is like, you know, essentially abusive, really, isn't it?
I mean, yeah.
And this is the whole thing, isn't it?
But I think it's fascinating how well the cast, particularly, he is, as you said, Lewis Gribben, as this guy, this poor kid, is amazing. He's got like a kind of haunted look to him. He's unbelievably pale, as you would be if you'd spent your entire life locked up in a house and not let out. And he just looks and acts the part so brilliantly that he is a lot of the reason why I think you actually believe this extraordinary premise. And the flashbacks are really well, you know, I often complain about peak TV's flashback obsession, but in this case, they're absolutely essential because they slowly unravel more and more of what it was like as a kid for him to be brought up like this, and more about the detail of the mum and the detail of what the dad's like, the stuff they watch. You should say these old movies, you know, these mostly black and white classic films that are kind of lighthearted to keep him entertained, keep them entertained. It's kind of grim, but it's so well done that it is also at the same time quite funny. You know, that once he is unleashed in the world and he's finding more and the doofus, I would say doofus more than bellend.
There's a fine distinction. Yeah.
He's not that horrible, and he's
prone to acts of bellendery.
I know, but he's essentially, I think he's mostly a good guy. Lisa McGillis, as you mentioned, from Mum, is fantastic because she really is caring for the kid and doing.
And she's
best.
Juggling her own life, right? Yeah, she's taking this issues, this. Yeah. Her nephew in.
Yeah, so she's fantastic. But the reason why kind of the whole series has legs really is because more and more, just putting him in almost any normal situation, going to the pub, you know, just he at one point he invades a neighbor's space, you know, like really inappropriate.
Yes,
pretty much everything he does is inappropriate because of he has no concept of in quotes normality. And I think the series has quite kind of interesting ideas about, you know, how you're. How socialized, you know, how we're socialized and what people, who is considered weird and freaky, who's what's considered.
Why are you looking
normal?
At me when you say that?
I am looking at you, I have to say. I think that's really interesting. I thought it was fascinating and just I know there's similar stories, but nothing quite like this. Like, I haven't seen anything with that quite this idea, an idea like this at the center of it. So I thought it was really good.
What's the Brendan Fraser film where he's in the bomb shelter and he's because they thought it's been a nuclear war and he comes out of the bomb shelter.
I can't remember
the name. Right, Blast from the Past. That's it. Right, Blast from the Past.
Yeah.
You know, which is a very sort of twee comedy centric spin on a similar tale. Which this is more about kind of the effects of abuse and human trauma on a young mind and how he's kind of fractured and how he has to deal with this. You know, he's kind of a bit PTSD'd and I think struggling to cope in the real world. I think his performance is. You're absolutely right. I think there's his performance sells this. I think there's actually a really nice, I'm going to use the word verisimilitude to all of this. Like it feels believable. It feels like if this had happened, this is exactly how it might play out. And I have questions. I have complexions about the sisters or his aunt's how complicit she was in this whole thing, what she knew, what she didn't know. So I do have questions. I quite would like to find out what happened. However, I'm probably not going to.
Oh, it's one of those.
Because it's one of those
James
where...
James can't carry on watching it.
No, I feel a bit like, you know, I can't really fault it. I think actually the premise is strong and I think it's actually well executed, but it didn't grip me. And that may say more about me than it says about the show.
I think
but
it just,
yeah, quite possibly.
Yeah, of course.
It's not for me. There wasn't enough sci-fi in it or something, but... You know, I could pronounce all of the names without rolling my R's, and you know, that doesn't sit well.
The
with
names
me, so.
Are very normal.
Yeah. So, yes, maybe not for me personally, but could be for you.
Mm.
Somewhere Boy, then, which airs on Channel 4. When, Boydie?
Well, it was started Sunday, the day before we go out. And then
so it's already on?
Yeah, it's four consecutive nights, though. Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
All right. So I guess we're on a technicality. Fine.
Yeah.
Right.
James annoyed that I knew he was going to say that.
Finally, this week, we have Kay's favourite show. It's Gangs of London Season 2, which we've already heard about. This sees the return of Chope Dorisu's Elliot, the undercover cop turned reluctant hitman, who obviously survived the bloodbath of Season 1. But whether he makes it to the end of this one is anyone's guess. It is bloody. It is violent. It is brutal as hell. Obviously, notorious gore hound Kay would love to tell us about it. But let's hear what Boyd thought first. Boyd, do you want to be in Sky's gang? Gangs. It's on Sky. It's good. Okay. It's good.
Yeah.
It's a solid pun.
It's pretty good. I loved Season 1 of Gangs of London, which was 2020, a long time ago.
It was,
now.
Yeah.
It was a massive, we were all in lockdown, I think, when it arrived.
It's a big event.
Yeah,
it was.
And it felt like perfect kind of lockdown viewing because it was so incredibly entertaining.
What else can make this situation hellish but can give you nightmares?
Yeah, but so this is the thing, it's interesting because it is properly spectacularly violent and gory, and limbs are hacked off, eyes gouged out.
I mean, the eye thing in this
a lot. But somehow it just establishes a tone.
Yes.
And I wouldn't say it's cartoony. It's almost like, but it's very heightened, the violence. Mm. There's a lot of, I think, CGI splatter.
Well, I've got a question for you about the violence. So my question is this. So obviously this was, Gareth Evans was kind of at the helm of this for most of it. He was the showrunner for the Season 1.
Of the Raid fame.
Of the Raid fame, yes, indeed. And Corin Hardy, who directed a lot of Season 1, is now showrunner for Season 2. Now, do you think, because Season 1, Gareth's background is obviously very martial arts, Silla, Indonesian, sort of stuff, as you've seen in The Raid. Corin is more a horror guy. Yeah. Did you find here that the emphasis almost moved, like there was more of a horror feel to it? Because don't get me wrong, there's a lot of violence in Season 1, but it felt like it was very, very bloody violence. Was this felt like it had more of a horror DNA to it?
You might be right, actually. Yeah, like, thinking about it, maybe, perhaps, yeah. But I just love it. I think it's really well written for this kind of show. You completely... fascinated by the characters, like, so Chope Dorisu's character Elliot, who was a undercover policeman infiltrating the family to find out what the fuck was going on with this, like, you know, with the London drug dealing gangs. Now he's ended up, this takes place a year later from the events at the end of the previous one, he's now working for the people who are really running things in this international global drug dealing operation, who are trying to kind of maintain some level of power and kind of calm, while all the different rival families are from different nationalities, etc., kind of are basically constantly on the brink of war and ultra violence. So he's in a completely new place, and he just exudes charisma. I think he could be the next James Bond. He just looks the part. He's got that kind of inscrutable quality going on. I just love him in it. He's brilliant. And then you've got Papa Esiedu in it still, as the guy who kind of inherited the huge amount of power from his dad. And he's kind of estranged from his dad, played by Lucien Massimati. That element of the family is really interesting, the Dumani family. Then you've got Michelle Fairley, who plays Marion Wallace, who was the wife of the guy who was killed in the first series, that Joe Cole was trying to find out why he was killed. And she's just this completely ruthless matriarch who is just borderline evil and horrendous.
Borderline.
I mean, okay, evil.
There is literally an entire episode in Season 1 where she tortures someone.
Yeah, she's out now.
I forgot about that. Yeah, right, yeah. So it's just very... And this series introduces a few new characters, new gangs in this kind of complex world. It is quite complicated, but it's very, very cleverly written and planned out so that you kind of keep track of all the different machinations that are going on within these different gangs of London. It's just, I think this really is visually spectacular. There's a set piece at the end of the first episode, which is a home raid, which is so stunningly well done.
It was like a theatre.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which we played at the Pilot 200 podcast. Corin came down.
We exclusively. And,
that's it. We revealed that, the home invasion scene.
It's like a 10-minute, is it 10, maybe 15 minutes?
It's a long sequence,
which is brilliantly done.
It was actually, it's weird with, word to say, but beautiful.
Yeah, it is. And that's what I was starting to say at the beginning about the blood splattering, and it is horrendously violent, but beauty is kind of, it's back to the old, you know, days of Sam Peckinpah, okay? I'm sure one of your favourite film directors. And Brian De Palma, I'm just going to, all of these kind of great directors who celebrated the visual wonder of absolute violence. And it's quite a weird, but it's one that I'm fascinated by. I love all that stuff. So for me, this is like the kind of, you know, it lives in that world of classic, ultra-violent 70s, 80s thrillers. And it's as good as, it's kind of better than most actual film action set piece thrillers that come out these days. It's just a fantastic show. I love it.
What's interesting with this is we reviewed this for Empire, and our reviewer Dan, he gave this 3 stars and said it wasn't a patch on season one. So I had really low expectations going into this, and yet I watched the first episode. I was like, that was brilliant. So I don't know what he's talking about. Obviously, you know, who knows? Maybe, you know, once I've seen the whole season, I will feel slightly differently. But actually, I thought exactly as you say, the violence was balletic at times. It was beautifully choreographed. It didn't feel too gratuitous. It's really brutal. Like the first scene, it doesn't mess about. There's a first scene which is chilling. Because all the way through this, obviously, there's a new kind of like very, very sort of nasty character called Koba. He's played by Walid Zueta. And he's basically terrifying. But no one is safe in this. There are deaths that you don't see coming. It wrongfoots you. And again, the story was complex and interesting, but relatively easy to follow, so I didn't feel lost by it, and I was gripped pretty much from the first episode. So yeah, I'm pretty stoked about watching the rest of this.
It does like big confrontations really well. There's a big confrontation at the end of the first episode between two characters. There are like those big meetings with all the different gangs, you know, those are, I'm amazed they got 3 stars.
Because it's like a parallel world. It's like a parallel London, isn't it? And Chopé is extremely good at this, to be fair. He's very, very good in this. James Bond. I thought it was great. Yeah, James Bond, Chopé de Russie. Make it happen. So Kay, it just upset you, right?
No, yes, it did. It did, right? First of all, I've just got to say from the outset that I actually agree with a lot of what you're saying, because I can see that it was, as you say, beautifully shot, and the storytelling and stuff like that. But obviously, it's not my genre. And I just felt, I went through a gamut of emotions watching this, right?
The
first one was just being incredibly pissed at both of you.
For making you watch it?
Yes. Yeah. I was like, F you guys.
Using it pissed in the American sense rather than drunk.
I was totally pissed
off.
And I hadn't pissed myself either. Yeah.
She didn't piss herself and then go out and get twatted because we made her watch it.
Totally drunk off your head.
No, I was very annoyed with you guys.
Okay, right.
And then I was just out and out horrified by the extreme violence, because the first few scenes, it's just like, everything. I mean, it's different ways of how someone could be just,
Someone is murdered with a sequin dress. That's all I'm going to say.
Yes.
I mean, incredible. The violence is wild in this, like, and especially from the outset. So I was like, what the hell am I being subjected to? And I had to watch it, lights on, doing stuff at the same time. Yet, every time I moved into a different room, I had to take it with me, because that's the thing, it was gripping and you want to know, you know, well, it was very confusing to me because I didn't know exactly who was who, and it's confusing if you've never watched it.
Yeah.
But I did want to see how it was all going to pan out. And I have to say, like, one thing I found, I became immune to the violence very quickly. That is what I was terrified about.
Yeah,
as well.
you get desensitized.
I was, and I was like, oh, this is nothing. Yeah, sure, someone else's brain matters all across the, like, the walls are being decorated by someone's innards. Yeah, sure. But the thing I found most brutal was, and it's not really a spoiler because whatever, but like, someone being made to eat bullets.
Yes. That's very early on, so it's not really a spoiler. But that's a very, very upsetting sequence.
It was really upsetting.
Yeah.
Because also those bullets have to come out.
Yeah, well, and we see that as well. So
I know.
Yeah.
So exit only. Is this the most violent show on TV?
We said that about the first season, didn't we?
Yeah,
pretty much.
Definitely. I think it's trying to be. You know, I think that's one of its you know, raison d'être is we want to show what you can do with violence in this day and age.
Well, it does it very well, but yeah, I mean, safe to say I will not be watching anymore.
Fair enough.
But I can appreciate the genius of it.
Very good. Well, Gangs of London Season 2 comes to Sky Atlantic and now on the 20th of October. Other things that are out this week, Boydie, well, I've got to be honest, War of the Worlds Season 3 lands on Disney Plus on the 19th. And I mean, at the end of Season 2 of War of the Worlds, which is the Trey Francais War of the Worlds, which has Daisy Edgar Jones in it, Gabriel Byrne, like, it felt like a pretty closed end to the story. I felt like it was done. Like, that felt like the end of the story.
Yeah.
But we're back. Gabriel Byrne is back.
Is Daisy Edgar Jones still in it?
I don't know if Daisy's still in it anymore.
I don't think so.
I suspect she's doing other things at this point. I could be wrong. But I really enjoyed it. There was a bit where I think I binged this whole thing one night until silly o'clock in the morning with the robot dogs and stuff like that. I found it quite chilling and it's really brutal at times. Like, it's quite upsetting.
All I remember from the first episode last year, wasn't it like robot dogs on the South Bank?
Yeah, robot dogs on the South Bank, like just killing people indiscriminately. Yeah, that's basically it. Yeah. It all goes a bit, it's a very odd show. But I'm going to probably watch this third season because I enjoyed one a lot and then two less so, but I'm still quite fascinated by it and I want to know where they're going. Mm. So that then, as I said, lands on Disney Plus. And then Handmaid's Tale season 5 has got a last minute Channel 4 date, which is 23rd of October at 9 p.m. the fifth season of that show. Is it the fifth and final, or is
no,
it just the
penultimate
fifth? Penultimate.
It's going to be the final.
Penultimate.
Yeah.
I've not watched it in years.
The greatest person in the world, Elizabeth Moss.
Yes, indeed. So that's going on. What else is happening, Boydie? Obviously, Doctor, The Power of the Doctor.
Yeah.
23rd of October, 7:30 p.m. on BBC One.
Correct. There's Chapelwaite.
Yes, Chapelwaite.
This new 10-part series based on Stephen King's short story, Jerusalem's Lot, set in the 1850s.
Yep. Adrian Brody. Emily Hampshire.
Seems quite a big deal. Mm. Paramount Plus showing it from Wednesday the 19th on a nightly basis.
They are, yeah.
Which is just another weird thing about streaming. Just
we didn't cover it this week because it was embargoed.
It was embargoed.
Despite having aired in the States already.
Yeah.
It's one of those really maddening embargoes.
The Fury of James.
Yeah, I was not happy about that at all.
Kay considered herself...
Oh, God, it was a reprieve.
Kay was just like, yes!
Big
freedom!
Reprieve. Big reprieve. And there's also The House Across the Street, which is a 4-part Channel 5 thriller, one of their high concept thrillers. This time they're showing it over 2 weeks, so Monday and Tuesday this week and next week. It stars the great Shirley Henderson, who is brilliant in everything. This is quite a rare, this is a lead role for her, which is quite rare. And our friend Craig Parkinson of Line of Duty, Caddy, and the Two Shot podcast fame is in it as well. And it's fascinating and creepy. It's basically like, she's a really sad figure. Shirley Henderson's character is a really sad figure. And a neighbour goes missing, a kid, and she becomes obsessed with that case. And it's like all the neighbours could be involved somehow. It's kind of like a mystery whodunit thriller, but it's really interesting. I went about on that, but longer than you probably would have hoped, James, and maybe because I've seen it, and we probably should have reviewed it instead of one of the shows we didn't review. Not naming which one, but, you know, just saying. What else... I want to mention that Friday Night Live is back on Channel 4 on Friday.
Friday Night Lights.
Friday Night Live. No, the groundbreaking comedy show that I was brought up watching as a kid, hosted by Ben Elton, and he's back hosting this one-off revival of it on Channel 4 on Friday. Yes, it's not a James Starr show, but I wanted to mention it because it's a very exciting occurrence. I think that might be it. Yeah, he says thumbing through this week's issue of Heat Magazine.
Okay, what is our pick of the week?
Gangs of London.
Gangs of London.
Yeah. Gangs of London it is. Excellent. Well, that is it for this week's show. If you would like to leave us a 5-star rating on whichever podcast platform takes your fancy, then we will gratefully receive them. And if you'd like to feedback to us directly, please do so at Pilot TV Pod or individually at James C. Dyer, at Boyd Hilton, and at Kate Ribeiro. Next week, we will be joined by Nadia Park, star of YA Witchfest, The Bastard Son and The Devil Himself, as well as Reiki Iola, star of The Pact. Plus, there is a host of Halloweeny horror that Kay is absolutely tripping over herself to see. Isn't that right, Kay?
Oh,
you're looking forward to it?
Cannot wait.
Barrels of blood, gore akimbo, all of it.
Oh, God, F my life.
Look forward to that next week. Until then, pilot out.